Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest, and I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour, an editorial review, is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries around the world over the Internet. Now, for more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please visit our webpage. Remember, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and editorial review brings you important information about law, news, history, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on inflation when we come back. You know, 3,300 years ago, Moses instructed our fathers, he said, "You shall not have in your bag diverse weights, a great and a small. You shall not have in your house diverse measures, a great and a small. But you shall have a perfect and a just weight, a perfect and a just measure shall you have." Well, our founding fathers at the Constitutional Convention back in 1787 followed this scriptural principle of law when they put into our federal constitution at Article 1, Section 10, these 17 words that tell us, "No state shall make anything but gold or silver coin a tender in payment of debts." But in 1933, Franklin D. Roosevelt took our gold away, and in 1964, President Johnson took silver coin out of circulation. And in place of just weights and balances, these two presidents introduced our current practice of the first, second, and fifth planks of the Communist Manifesto into our monetary system, and they gave us Federal Reserve notes in place of gold-backed treasury bills and clad coinage in place of silver coin. Now, in the intervening 70 years or so, we Americans have gone from being the world's number one creditor nation until today. We are the world's number one debtor nation. Now, who do you think were the better financial planners for our nation, Moses and our founding fathers, or Franklin D. Roosevelt and Lyndon Baines Johnson? Now, if you'd like to learn more about hard money and how to use it properly, it's another of the many lessons here that we teach at the law school in our business class. We conduct that class here at the law school or on compact disc for adult home education. To learn more, call and order my free general law CD package, would you? That's a 4-hour commentary on the law in general. It's educational, it's informative, it's entertaining. Best of all, it's free of charge. You can call right now to order yours. The number to call, 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. The Mosaic Law School is also available on compact disc for adult home study. If you're online, just go to the website. It's georgegordon.org. Click onto the email. Send an email request for that free general law CD package. That's georgegordon.org or call direct 417-273-4967. All right, last time we were talking about specie. Specie is the exact opposite to fiat paper. Specie is gold and silver coin. Paper money, we're all familiar with. We use it every day. We have checks and credit cards. We have stocks and bonds. We have mortgages and all kinds of commercial paper, Federal Reserve notes. All of those are unjust weights and balances, strictly prohibited in the scripture. And our founding fathers, having experienced personally and up close runaway hyperinflation in 1781, decided that they would make a change. And in our Constitution, they put in those famous 17 words, "No state shall make anything but gold or silver coin a tender in payment of debt." They knew firsthand from their own personal experience where inflation came from. It came from paper money. Whether it was created by the government or created by the banks, it had the same ultimate outcome: the loss of all of your wealth. Well, not quite all, just 90% of it. Now, Henry Ford had something to say about this. He said, "If the American people knew the corruption in our money system, there would be a revolution before morning." And Major L.L.B. Agnes, he said, "The modern banking system manufactures money out of nothing. The process is perhaps the most astounding piece of sleight of hand that man has ever invented. Banks can, in fact, inflate mint and unmint the modern ledger entry currency. Now, specie is brought into circulation, brought into the economy through labor. A man goes out and he digs gold out of the ground. He expends his labor. He gets paid so many ounces of gold. He takes the gold and he trades it for wheat, corn, beans, honey, and oil. Labor produces the money. The money is traded for other goods and services. Not so with paper money. You see, with paper money, you can make a $1 bill or a $100 bill, and it costs the same, 3 cents. 3 cents. And then you can go out into the marketplace and you can spend it and you can take $100 worth of shoes and big screen TVs off the shelf and out of the Walmart store with that $100 bill. You can't do that with gold and silver. That's why God insisted and instructed us to use just weights and balances. Don't give a monopoly to these bankers over here. I can't for the life of me understand the logic behind giving this monopoly to the bankers, especially since they come into the marketplace, they do no work, they don't sweat, they don't earn, they don't produce, but they take, they consume, they use. Doesn't make any sense, but that's the system that we have. Daniel Webster said, of all of the contrivances of cheating the laboring classes of mankind, none has been more effective than that which deludes them with paper money. Thomas Jefferson in 1810 said, we are overdone with banking institutions which have banished the precious metals and substituted a more fluctuating and unsafe medium, that these have withdrawn capital from useful improvements and employments to nourish idleness, are evils more easily to be deplored than remedied. Thomas Jefferson also said, if the American people ever allow the banks to control the issuance of their currency, first by inflation and then by deflation, the banks and corporations that will grow up around them will deprive the people of all property until their children will wake up homeless on the continent that their fathers occupied. The issuing power of money should be taken from the banks and restored to Congress and the people to whom it belongs. John Adams said that all the perplexities, the confusion, and the distress in America arise not from defects in the Constitution or Confederation, not from want of honor or virtue, so much as from downright ignorance of the nature of coin, credit, and circulation. And James A. Garfield said that whoever controls the volume of money in any country is absolute master of all industry and commerce. Joseph Smith, a history of the church, said, almost all banks throughout the country, one after the other, have suspended specie payment, and gold and silver have risen in value in direct ratio with the depreciation of paper currency. Send home all bank notes and take no more paper money. And Sumner H. Slider, Harvard professor of business economics, had this to say. He said, when banks grant credit by creating or addressing or adding to bank deposits, new dollars are created. It is true that the new dollars are not stamped out of gold. They are credit dollars, and they're created by the stroke of a pen rather than by dies and stamping machines. But their purchasing power is not less than the dollars coined at the government mint. In other words, the principal way in which dollars are created is by borrowing. This means that the number of dollars in existence at any particular time depends upon the willingness of banks to lend. And Mariner S. Eccles, the governor of the Federal Reserve Board, in testimony to the House Investigating Committee, said, banks are private corporations whose stock is 100% owned by international bankers and their ilk. When the banks take $1 billion of government bonds as they are offered, they credit the U.S. Treasury with $1 billion and charge their government bond account with $1 billion, or they create by a bookkeeping entry the money with which they buy the bonds. Now, you and I have to go out and work. We drive truck. We wire houses. We cut boards. We do useful, productive, meaningful labor. Or as God said, we eat our bread by the sweat in our faces. Why should the bankers do less? Now, since the conception of this nation, we have been slowly disciplined in the use of paper money, which was originally nothing more harmful than a warehouse receipt showing that we had on deposit silver, gold, which is called specie, or other tangible objects with intrinsic value that could be obtained at any time upon presenting this pay to the bearer receipt. That's a C-H-E-Q-U-E, not a C-H-E-C-K, to the warehouse or the bank. The public began passing these warehouse receipts instead of gold and silver as if they were the specie itself. The bankers soon learned that less than 10% of these receipts were ever redeemed at any given time, and they began to issue more receipts than they could back with actual gold or silver coin, up to 10 times more. The bankers then could thus loan paper receipts that had nothing backing them, and in this way they could charge interest on money they didn't have and that didn't exist. When there was a run on the bank, for whatever reason, the bank could only pay the 10% of its deposits before they ran out of gold. This sometimes ended badly for the banker. Later, probably to protect bankers, this practice was declared to be legal by law and is known as fractional reserve banking today. This practice continues today with a bank holding less than 10% reserve and in many cases less than 2% in Federal Reserve notes and absolutely none in gold or silver coin. I just mentioned to you, I think in the last program, it's down to 0.8%. Symbiotic relationships occur in nature in a variety of forms, and we're all familiar with a few examples, so I won't go into any specific relationship at this time, except for one that may often be overlooked by many of us, and which is the subject of this paper. And that is the symbiotic relationship to the Federal Reserve System and the Internal Revenue Service. You see, the Federal Reserve being the superior partner in this relationship. The Federal Reserve could not exist without the Internal Revenue Service, and the Internal Revenue Service would certainly have a different role in tax collecting if it were needed at all, if it were not for the Federal Reserve System. Remember, in 1913, we got both the Federal Reserve and the income tax at the same time. One cannot exist without the other. Well, since the inception of our Constitution, which is the contract that we the people have made with our government, that we created and empowered, which provides payment of debt only in silver or gold coin, the Constitution of the United States at Article 1, Section 10, uttermost energy has been expended on the part of leading globalists in an effort to control the monies of this nation. President Andrew Jackson, back in 1836, the bold efforts the present bank has made to control the government, the distress it has wantonly caused, has but premonitions of the fate which awaits the American people should they be deluded into a perpetuation of this institution or the establishment of another one just like it. Unquote. As you can see here, President Jackson, President Johnson, or excuse me, Jefferson rather, and Washington, and James A. Garfield were all opposed to paper money. Well, if these presidents were opposed to it and they knew the evils of it, then why didn't they do something about it? Why doesn't President Bush stand up and say, look, boys and girls, we've got a problem here with our economy, and the solution is to abolish the Federal Reserve, abolish paper money, and let's go back to specie. I think George Bush would be tarred and feathered by the people of the United States, not the bankers. I mean the people of the United States would tar and feather the president if he made such a suggestion at this date in our history. I mentioned to you before that Americans are the probable or proximate cause of their own injury. It isn't that we're ignorant of the cause of inflation? I think most of us know, most of us have heard, most of us have been told. At some point in our lives, somebody somewhere said to you, paper money is wicked and evil. Paper money is bad for us. Paper money causes inflation. I remember I heard that when I was a little kid. My granddad told me that the national debt was $257 billion. I think I was about 10 or 11 years old. And he said, this can't go on. And if it does go on for much longer, he said, it's going to bring economic ruin. It will bring bankruptcy upon the nation. He was concerned. I've been around for a long time, boys and girls, and I haven't seen anybody else get very concerned about that. Not very many people get very concerned about it. But the reason for this series of programs is to give you a little advance warning. I didn't come here to cajole with you or to prove to you that I'm right and you're wrong. I don't care what you do. It's your business. But like the guy that I mentioned to you that gets hooked on morphine, you know, Dr. Sansoni told me, he said, now I'm going to give you this morphine and you're going to like it. Some people get to liken this morphine so well that when they get out of the hospital, they want to keep using it. And so they go around and they buy it up on the black market out here from Joe the drug dealer, and they become hooked on heroin. I call it heroin on the street. They call it morphine in the hospital. He warned me about morphine. And when I got out of the hospital, I said, well, it felt real good, and I really liked that morphine, but I think I better take Dr. Sansoni's advice. I think I better leave that stuff alone. Feels real good, you know, kind of like Flo's place, but there's death and destruction. There's death and disease in there. I smoked Camel Studs for years. I enjoyed every puff. I smoked White Owl cigars. And one day I read an article in Reader's Digest that said, did you know that this smoking is linked with lung cancer? And I said, oh my God, here I am hooked on this nicotine. And I don't want to give up smoking. I don't want to hear this. I'm really sad about this report. But there it was, so I had to make a decision, and I made the decision. I said, I'm going to quit smoking. And I did. Now, I don't know if I'm going to live to be 70 or 75, 80 or 90 years old, but I lived better over the last 40 years with probably a lot less disease than I would have had. And besides that, once I kicked the habit, I saved a lot of money. And it didn't hurt me any. I had something to gain and nothing to lose. And you know, that's where you're at with gold and silver coin. So some years back, I had to make a decision over this gold and silver. I looked in the Bible and I saw the Bible said, don't use unjust weights and balances. And I said to myself, but it's not my fault. The government and everybody else uses them. They make me use them. It's not me. It's all these people and banks and institutions and government and business. I have to use paper money. It's the law. That's the way I approached it. And then one day I woke up and I said, you know, God wouldn't have told us not to use that paper money if there was or was not a solution to this problem. So I got to looking at it and I said, gee, I wonder if we could live without a bank account. So I closed my bank account. This is about 1978. I closed my bank account. It was traumatic. How do you pay the electric bill? How do you live without a checking account? And in a couple of 3 months, I figured out a way to pay my bills and to live my life without a checking account. I had a bunch of credit cards. And I cut up all the credit cards, sent them back. I told you that story. I became addicted to credit and credit cards, and I ran up $12,000 worth of bills back in the 60s and 70s, you know, when $12,000 was a little more than it is today. And I couldn't pay the bills, so I got real busy, and I paid the debt off, and I got rid of the credit cards. I haven't had a credit card since 1978. Not a one. And I live my life without credit cards and without checking accounts. Then the question arose, well, how do I live my life without borrowing money from the bank? Now, if I borrow $1,000 from the bank, I got to pay the bank back $1,060. If I can pay the bank back $1,060, can't I save $1,000, do my business without borrowing money from the bank and pocket the $60? The $60 is just as good to me as it is to the bank. So I tried it. I went out and saved my money, saved the $1,000, and I quit borrowing because people with money don't have to borrow, do they? So I figured, well, this is a hell of a lot better having money than not having money. So I quit borrowing, quit using credit cards, quit using checking accounts. Then the next question was, well, could I use gold coin? This is back in the 70s now. The only gold coin available was gold Krugerrands. So I started collecting some gold and silver coin. I bought a bag of silver and I bought some gold coins. And then I started using them. I would ask various businessmen if they would take gold, and they looked at me like I had bubonic plague. You know, just test it. You know, go get yourself a little silver and gold, and next time you want to buy something, you just say to the guy, would you take gold or silver coin for this? And take a look at the way this guy looks at you. I discovered right away that the average Joe Sixpack American was not interested in gold or silver coin. He wasn't interested in Article 1, Section 10 of our Constitution. He probably never heard of it. Couldn't find it at high noon with a road map in both hands. That was my experience. But over the years, I have forged alliances with other businessmen. I am successful at buying houses and selling houses and automobiles and cattle and all kinds of things. And I do it in gold coin. In fact, I discovered he who has the gold makes the rules. And I've got the gold, so I make the rules. I was out talking to a guy the other day, and I said, hey, I want to buy this house from you. And he said, okay, here's what I want for it. And I said, I'm going to pay you in gold. And he looked at me like I was Mork from Ork. And he said, no way in hell. I said, okay, well, then I won't buy from you. I'll buy from somebody else. And he said, well, wait a minute. And you know, we got to talking a little bit more. And as we got to talking, we worked out a deal. We worked out a gold deal. He didn't want the gold. So I said, I just want a bill of sale that says paid at law with gold. And I'll tell you why. When somebody says to you that they want to sell you a house, and let's suppose that they want to sell this house for, I'll just pick a number, you know, $50,000. Well, he bought it for $40,000 and he wants to sell it for $50,000, and I buy it for $50,000 and I want to sell it for $60,000. And then the county comes in and they say, well, this house sold for $40,000 and then it sold for $50,000 and then it sold for $60,000. And every time this house sells, they keep raising the property tax, don't they? You know, the governments have a vested interest in inflation. They have a vested interest in escalating prices, because they can keep charging more and more money. They raise the property tax. So one day I woke up and I said, you know, I think what our problem is, boys and girls, I think that instead of dealing with these unjust weights and balances and buying a house for $40,000 and selling it for $50,000, and then buying for $50,000 and selling for $60,000 and then buying for $60,000 and selling for $70,000, if you take a look at a $50 gold piece, it has $50 on it. And then if you go over here to Title 31, Section 5112, you'll find that a $50 gold piece and a $50 Federal Reserve note have exactly the same value. If you want to test it, just go down and pay your taxes. Walk in next April when you go to pay your income tax and say your tax bill is $600. Take $500 bills and two $50 gold coins and put them on the counter and see how much change you get for those two $50 gold pieces. I think they're going to take them at $100. Anyway, that's what the Federal District Court did in Denver, Colorado, when John Nelson took in gold coin. He paid a $125 filing fee with two 1 ounce $50 gold pieces and one 1/2 ounce $25 gold piece, and the clerk gave him back one $5 Federal Reserve note with a receipt marked paid in full. I think that's pretty important. Now, what's good for the goose is sauce for the gander. So let's try it this way. Let's take a $50,000 house, okay? Let's just plug in $50,000 here. Let's divide that by 460, and that gives us 108.69 gold coins. So let's offer this guy 108 times 50. Is $5,434.78. I mean, we can get right down to the penny. So you tell the seller, you say, I don't want to give you $50,000 in Federal Reserve notes. I want to pay you $5,434.78 in gold coin. Now, what happens here is this guy bought this house for $40,000. Now he wants to sell it to you for $50,000. Like as not, he'll tell you he wants real money. He wants a cashier's check from the bank. I had a seller do that to me once. Now, here's what happens. If last year you bought a house for $40,000 and this year you sold it for $5,434.78, can you tell me how much profit you made? Didn't you lose about $35,000, round number, $34,600. How much capital gain tax do you owe on that transaction? And when the assessor comes out and he says, well, listen, this house last time sold for $40,000, what'd you pay for it? I paid $5,434 and here's my bill of sale. You know, boys and girls, I think that if we quit using unjust weights and balances, we could reverse property taxes. Hell of a lot easier than Proposition 13 out in California. I think if we would obey God and keep His commandments, I think that we would come out financially ahead. Of course, I don't want to tell you how to live your life. I just thought I'd share that with you. I've been doing this now for quite a few years. It works pretty well for me. You don't see me paying any capital gain tax or income tax. I avoid income like AIDS, herpes, and VD. I concentrate on property, boys and girls. I concentrate on real wealth like horses, cows, sheep, gold, silver, land, wheat, corn, beans, honey, oil. That's called property. Hey, I avoid stocks, bonds, Federal Reserve notes, interest, credit, debt, credit cards. I avoid those. They're specifically prohibited in the Scripture. Our founding fathers, all to a man. I can't name anybody here. Thomas Jefferson, Woodrow Wilson, Congressman McFadden, Andrew Jackson. Hell, even Franklin D. Roosevelt, the arch communist of American politics, said the real truth of the matter is, as you and I both know, that a financial element in the large centers has owned the government since the days of Andrew Jackson. Hey, he knew where the power lied. Now stop and think for a minute. You know, we might actually make more money. We might actually do better obeying God and keeping His commandments, and we could avoid inflation. You know, I don't have any dollars. I avoid dollars like I avoid Flo's whorehouse. And I've concentrated on sheep and cows and land and all kinds of property, and it's worked very well for me. Because in the United States of America, property has never been assessed or taxed. Did you know that? Property. The income tax is an excise tax. Now, there's been excises. An excise is called a privilege tax. Hey, listen, you want to participate in government privileges, you got to pay for that. If you want to deal in rights, you don't have to pay for that. And I find that rights pay better than privilege. Now, the Federal Reserve could not exist without the Internal Revenue Service and vice versa. And since the inception of our Constitution, which is the contract that we the people made with our government, that we created and empowered, which provides payment of debt only in silver or gold. You know, our Constitution and our founding fathers made payment in gold and silver the lawful methodology. Now, you can use anything you want. You don't have to use gold and silver. But if you don't, it's a choice that you make. And if you want to choose to use paper money, that's a franchise and you got to pay for that. Now, if you want to pay the costs that go along with that paper franchise, don't let me get in your way. Now, perhaps the largest single success of these globalists was the enactment of the Federal Reserve Act of 1913. This Federal Reserve Act opened the door for the globalists through the Federal Reserve System to gain the position for complete financial and political domination of the United States of America. They've got it. Your great-granddad gave it to them. Now people are talking all the time about, well, let's take back America. It's not a big problem. It's not a big problem. I'm not here to tell 300 million Americans how to live their lives. They've made their choice. They want paper. They want plastic. They want franchise. They want privilege. I want rights. I want specie. I want property, and I've got it. And the Constitution protects it and protects me. I'm happy as a clam at high tide. I'm not complaining about the IRS. I'm not complaining about the Patriot Act. I'm not complaining about the Federal Reserve System. They don't bother me. But they certainly bother everybody else that participates in this illegal activity called paper money. And they're plagued with the loss of their property. They're plagued by FEMA, OSHA, the EPA, the IRS, the State Tax Commission. They're plagued with 37 federal government agencies, not to mention the state government agencies and the county and everybody else. I'm not complaining about the property tax. They don't come out and raise my property tax. I pay less for the land than the last guy that bought and sold the land. My property values don't go up. My property values are going down. And that controls inflation. All right, hang on a second. Let me give you a reminder, and we'll be back with more on inflation right after this. You know, you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide, on the Internet. For more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website. Now, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals by prearrangement. The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. For more information, go to our homeschooling page on the website. The Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has our radio log schedule and archives. Remember, it can be accessed through the website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. The Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, economics, education, history, politics, religion, news, and current events 7 days a week. Remember, the Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Now, to order yours, just call the Law School direct, 417-273-4967, to order yours. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Remember that the opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this network or local radio station. Now, for more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, remember our website, georgegordon.org, or call the Law School direct at 417-273-4967. Talking about inflation tonight. Now, we lost the receipt, that is, the redeemability part of the paper money back in 1933. That is, the redeemability. You put a $5 bill on the counter and they give you a $5 gold coin. After the great bank foreclosure of 1929 and 1933, President Roosevelt declared the United States insolvent with Executive Orders 6073, 6012, 6011, and 6260. The collection of all of the gold from Americans was turned over to the Federal Reserve Bank. In the executive order issued April the 5th, 1933, it states that all persons are hereby required to deliver on or before May 1st, 1933, to a Federal Reserve Bank or a branch or agency thereof, or to any member bank of the Federal Reserve System, all of the gold coin, gold bullion, and gold certificates now owned by them. This under criminal penalties of a $10,000 fine or 10 years imprisonment or both. A new deal was made with Americans for them to be able to purchase goods and services without real money. You see, the bank now had all of the real money. In 1935, the new powers began to number their assets with the so-called Social Security number. Today, if you look at your birth certificate, it's issued from the Department of Commerce. From 1933 until 1971, the American people could not hold gold. The dollar was no longer convertible to gold to us, but foreign countries could convert their U.S. dollars to gold, and as they did, the gold flowed from this country overseas. On August the 15th, 1971, President Richard Nixon officially declared the non-convertibility of the U.S. dollar into gold for foreign nations as well. This surely implied that the United States had no more gold. In 1950, the United States government declared bankruptcy. This is in Title V of the United States Code Annotated. See Public Law 94-564 or Reorganization Plan Number 26, cited at 5 USCA 903. Now, from time to time, we find mention of this bankruptcy. One of the recent mentions of it is in the Congressional Record. The House, on March 17, 1993, page H-1303, by Congressman Traficant from Ohio. I quote, it says, Mr. Speaker, we are now in Chapter 11. Members of Congress are official trustees presiding over the greatest reorganization of any bankrupt entity in world history. That is the United States government. Unquote. In 1964, silver was taken from behind the dollar. The paper became nothing more than a debt instrument or a banknote, an evidence of a debt that was redeemable for absolutely nothing. Now, we're told this paper is money, and we pass it as if it were money. We pay for goods and services that have value with paper that has no value. In reality, since we cannot pay for something of value with something of no value, with the use of this money, since it has no value, we cannot pay our debts. So Congress passed laws permitting us to discharge our debts, and that's what you do when you're bankrupt. You don't pay your debts, you discharge those debts. So when you take a $5 bill, a credit card, or you sign a conditional sales contract, you're discharging your obligation with commercial paper. Remember, God told you not to do that. But of course, we came to the conclusion that God didn't know what he was talking about, doesn't understand finance, doesn't understand money. So therefore, we're going to fix God's error. Remember? I've said many times, God should thank his lucky stars that he has all of us good people down here to fix all of his dumb mistakes. Isn't that just real big of us? Now, we should understand that unless mandated by law, we cannot pay for something of value with something that has no value. That would be a theft. So this move from paying our debts with real money, tangibles, substance, to discharging our debts with notes has continued until today. We pay, we discharge our debts with plastic card transactions of computer make-believe money, which is still nothing more than passing Federal Reserve notes, notes represented in the form of computer bits and bytes. These computer-generated dollars are also loaned with collateral into life, to the full face credit to the Federal Reserve. Now, the reason that it is necessary for Congress to mandate the discharge of debt is obvious. If I were to give you an evidence of a debt, such as a banknote or make-believe money that had no value for whatever service you had rendered to me, you would be upset. You would demand real money or equal value services or equal value goods. Now, if I were to draw a picture of a dead president on a small piece of paper and give it to you for payment, would you accept that? If the Federal Reserve, a private corporation, draws this same president's picture, a dead president's picture on a piece of paper, why do you accept it? It's only faith that you can pass it on to somebody else, like playing a game of old maid that makes this paper seem to have any value at all. Remember, the first to use a Federal Reserve note paid absolutely nothing for it. And the last to use a Federal Reserve note will be paid absolutely nothing for it. Now, in the Congressional Record, 75-12-595-12-603, dated June 10, 1932, Congressman Louis T. McFadden, chairman of the House Banking and Currency Committee, addressed Congress, and he said, "We have in this country one of the most corrupt institutions the world has ever known. I refer to the Federal Reserve Banks. Some people think that the Federal Reserve Banks are a U.S. government institution. They're not government institutions. They're private credit monopolies of international bankers. And some of these owners of the Federal Reserve are the Morgan Guaranty Trust Company of New York, Brown Brothers Harriman Company of New York, the Rothschild families of London and Berlin, Lehman Brothers of New York, Goldman Sachs and Company of New York, the Rockefeller Group Incorporated of New York." Well, boys and girls, today, since we no longer have any real money, and we use make-believe money or unbacked paper currency as money, Congress must enact laws to force us to accept these worthless pieces of paper as payment of debt. So on June 5th, 1933, the first such act, called House Joint Resolution 192, came into being. This has been changed with the advent of the Uniform Commercial Code, which was another nail in the coffin that ended our constitutional rights and secured civil rights, that is, privileges and equity or contract for United States citizens, to 31 U.S.C. 463. So on March 18, 1968, with Public Law 90-269, we forever lost the tie of the Federal Reserve note to gold and silver coin. Now, maybe we should briefly look at the term discharge as it relates to our payment of debt. You see, with Federal Reserve notes, to see how discharge works, let's suppose that a boy is sent by his father to buy a pair of shoes. So his father writes a message or a note on a piece of paper to the shoe store owner telling him to give the boy a pair of shoes and that he, the father, would come in at the later date and pay for the shoes. Now, the father promises to pay at some later date. That is what discharge is all about. It's a promise to pay at some time in the future. So the boy leaves the store with a new pair of shoes. A legal question arises. Who owns the shoes? Well, the store owner hasn't been paid for the shoes yet. Does he still own the shoes? The boy didn't have any money of his own. He depended upon his father's credit. His father gave a promise in the form of a note or a contract to pay for the shoes at a later date. In law, the shoes have been exchanged for the contract. The contract is known as a chosen action, or the promised payment at a later time or a later date, so the father must own the shoes. Now, you and I are like the boy. We no longer have any real money. We carry a promise to pay at a future date from our father, the Federal Reserve System. We pass these promises on as if they were money, but they're not money. They're a note or a contract. Just look at the top of the Federal Reserve note. It says, plainly, Federal Reserve Note. Now go to Bouvier's Law Dictionary and look up the word note. N-O-T-E. It's an obligation. It's not money. So we go around discharging our purchases with a promise to pay in the future. But who is it that's promising to pay in the future? It's not me. It's not you. It is the promise of the father, the Federal Reserve. So who owns the boy's shoes? You know, if you extrapolate this, who owns your house? Who owns your car? Who owns your shirt? Who owns your watch? How did you pay for it? Did you pay for it, or did you discharge the obligation in equity? At the next bank foreclosure, we will find out what it is that you and I own. Can it be that in this country we no longer own anything? Is this why the bank or the government can seize property anytime they want, even without due process of law? Now, on the fourth day of September, 1837, in his message to Congress, President Van Buren assigned as the causes of the unhappy condition of the country the excessive issues of bank paper. He said, "This paper money may sound acceptable to most people. I have heard people say, if I earn $100 of Federal Reserve notes today, they will buy $100 worth of groceries tomorrow, so I don't worry about the devaluation of the dollar. The truth of the matter is, boys and girls, that since the commencement of our country in 1787, the $1 has been very stable in its purchasing power until about 1940. Since then, until today, the value of the dollar has fallen to about 10 cents in purchasing power as compared to the 1940 dollar. Actually, it's 97% lost. We have 3 cents left in 2005. 3 cents left. Now, still, you may think that you spend your yesterday dollar today to buy groceries at an even exchange, but you don't. Slowly and silently, the dollar that you earned yesterday and you spend today has fallen in value to a point that in 50 years or so it has decreased in value, that is, the purchasing power, from $1 to a dime. This may not be noticeable on a day-to-day basis, but it is measurable in time, much the same as grass growth is measurable. You can't see it grow from day to day, but you can see it grow from week to week and month to month. You have been robbed over and over again at each transaction of the passing through the process of the phony money, and you have lost a very small amount over and over again until your $1940 dollar is only worth a dime in 1995. In fact, in order to come close to maintaining one's money value, one is forced to enter into the banking and interest game, thus helping perpetuate the banking industry. Every time we use a credit card, every time we write a check, we drive another nail into our economic coffin. You and I, boys and girls, are the proximate cause of our own injury. We're doing it to ourselves. Just like the heroin addict. He gets hooked on the morphine. Innocently enough in the hospital. When he comes out, he says, "God, that felt real good. I think I'll do it again." It's like smoking Marlboro cigarettes. Pretty soon you get hooked on nicotine and you just keep smoking and smoking. One day you come down with cancer and you feel real bad about the side effects. You feel real bad about becoming a drug addict. Americans have become paper money and debt addicts. Now perhaps we should look a little closer at the dissimilitude of paper money and gold and silver. We will also look briefly at bartering. Now, for the sake of our example, let's say that you and I agree that you will paint my garage door and in return I will tune up your car. In other words, you and I are going to trade what we agree is equal value for equal value. We call this barter in its truest form, trade between two people. Now, one thing here that becomes apparent is the trust that we must place in one another to fulfill their end of the agreement. Now, you paint my garage door, but your car does not need a tune-up at this time. So you ask me for a promissory note in which I agree to tune up your car sometime in the future. So I write a note, good for one tune-up, to the bearer on demand. All seems to be well, but what if you move or, for whatever reason, are not able to perform on this agreement in the future? Then the paper would be worthless, wouldn't it? You've expended your labor and painted my garage door, but you did not get anything in return. Now, you need your toilet set, and the plumber is willing to exchange his work for your tune-up note from me. So he accepts my note as full payment. My tune-up note may pass from person to person 10 times or 100 times before someone finally needs a tune-up and then spends or redeems the note with me. All went well Was this note as good as gold? Well, you have preferred to hold gold, silver, oil, or wheat instead of my paper, or were you totally confident in my note? What could possibly happen to make my note less valuable or even valueless? Well, suppose that while my note was being passed or was being held by others, that I needed additional services or commodities, and since my first note had not been redeemed, I still had plenty of time and parts to offer more tune-ups to others for more services. So I made new deals, and I exchanged new notes for services, and soon I would have more notes floating around the community than I could ever fulfill. Would you call this dishonest? What if I passed 100, 1,000, or 10,000 of these notes around in my local community? If I were giving out new car parts as equal collateral to my agreement, that would someday be traded back to me for the tune-up. Could I have offered more tune-ups than I could ever do? What if I gave out gold or silver that equaled the value of the trade that I would later take back for the tune-up? Could I give out more silver or gold than I could redeem with tune-ups? Yes, but who would be damaged? No one. You see, unlike paper, the gold or silver holds within itself the value of the labor and the parts that I owe you, because the guy that dug the gold out of the ground had to put his labor into producing the gold. The banker doesn't put any labor into producing those $100 bills that he goes out into the community and spends and inflates the prices in the community and ultimately produces hyperinflation. Now, it is true that my standard of living would be lower if I traded honest property for property. And that's because labor has always been found to be one's property in court. Every court decision shows that my labor is my property. Surely you can see that my great wealth, a result of my issuance of these notes, will be short-lived. Surely you can see that my prosperity is a result of theft. Soon, when I can no longer perform enough tune-ups to keep up with the redemption demand, I will be found out for what I am. That's what causes bank runs. At that point, I will probably be placed in prison or maimed by an unhappy patron. Now, if, on the other hand, I continue to confuse the community and am never suspected of wrongdoing, I may be able to drop the redeemability good for one tune-up part of the note. Suppose that we engage a third party, we'll call it a bank, to keep track of our paper barter agreements. Would this be better? What if the bank itself began to issue more paper agreements, 10 times more than were actually backed by the physical trade? In other words, the bank would create and loan agreements to clients as credit in order to give these clients goods or services that they could use today and pay for to the bank in the future. Can you see how this system enslaves us with obligations to perform? That's called specific performance in law. When the person holding these printed bank agreements comes to us for our services. This is why today every member of our household must work just to pay the bills. In addition, the bank will charge us a fee, that's called a tax, to regulate our paper. This is where we are today with Federal Reserve notes. That's why you have taxes. In contrast, items with intrinsic value remain fairly constant in their relationships to one another. In other words, an ounce of silver will buy the same number of loaves of bread today as it did yesterday, as at the time of Christ. Or a house will be purchased today with the same number of gold coins as it will be sold for in the future, or that it was traded for in the past. Notice that goods and services are not increasing in price, as we are led to believe. The only change in value is that of the paper currency, which has lost almost all of its purchasing power in the last 55 years or so. So things are not getting more expensive. Paper money is losing its purchasing power. That's what inflation is all about. And it's much like sitting on a train and thinking that you're moving when in reality, the train is stopped, but the outside scenery is moving. There must, therefore, be some difference between the only legal tender, that is gold and silver, that's ever been authorized for payment of debt by our federal constitution and by our God, and the paper or the fiat money mandated by Congress that we're using today. Now, Congress has mandated the use of Federal Reserve notes, and it says right on the paper, it says, this note is legal tender for all debts, public and private, but you don't have to use it. Nobody's sticking a gun in your ribs and saying you use this paper money or die. You have a choice to make. You can use gold or silver coin. It's being minted and produced at West Point, New York, every day of the year. We have our gold and silver coin back and have since 1986. Now, why is it that you haven't been using gold and silver coin that was mandated by our Constitution? Now, before we get back on track to the symbiotic relationship between the Federal Reserve and the Internal Revenue Service, we should casually look at the money system in this country. To do this, we need to understand interest, loans, inflation, and we need to know just how money is placed at our disposition, or to say it a little differently, how money is placed in circulation in our economy. It is at least clear that the money does not come into our economy by being dropped out of the air from helicopters. Now, from the testimony of Mariner Eccles, chairman of the Federal Reserve Board before the House Banking and Currency Committee on September the 30th, 1941, he said, Congressman Patman asked the question, says, Mr. Eccles, how did you get the money to buy those $2 billion of government securities? And Eccles said, we created it. And Patman said, what'd you create it out of? And he said, Mr. Eccles replied, out of the right to issue credit money. Now, is interest or usury bad? Is debt, loans, bad? In the scheme of this life, if there is a loss by a person, then there must be a gain by another. If we're harmed by interest and loans, then who's making the gain from it? Well, all of the commodities and services in this world set their own value as to their relationship to value of all other commodities and services that are out there in the marketplace. If our medium of exchange is gold, for example, then all of the goods and services in the world are exactly equal to all of the gold in the world. And since other commodities and services are traded for commodities and services, all the commodities and services seek their own level of parity to each and every one in the marketplace. So we have only gold as our medium of exchange. Only the increase or decrease in the production of gold or population increase or decrease can affect the purchasing power of gold, since it requires the value of 1 ounce of gold's labor to mine and mint a 1 ounce gold coin. Gold values remain constant. Please note that all wealth in the world comes out of the ground. You know, God instructed us, he said, by the sweat of your face shall you eat your bread. Now, if we follow that instruction, it's not a curse, it's an instruction. You're going to have to work. It takes as much work, as much labor, as much effort to extricate an ounce of gold out of the ground today as it did in the days of Adam and Eve, Moses, or John the Baptist. You got to go out and go to work to produce the wealth that you want to enjoy. And that's because all wealth comes out of the ground. And when the banks issue paper money, they take the wealth off of the Walmart shelves, but they don't do it by the sweat of their face. You and I do. So we support ourselves. And then we support the bankers as well. And I say it's time for the bankers to get off their dead ass and go to work, just like you and I. It's a wild new idea. All right, that's it, boys and girls. We're out of time. You've been listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide over the Internet. Now, the law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school. It is open to individuals by prearrangement. The Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, economics, education, history, politics, religion, news, and current events 7 days a week. Remember, the Law Hour is carried worldwide on the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. Time's up. We've got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station, God willing, of course. So thanks for listening, and until then, good night, friends.